Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And it is a content day. So Mondays, we have our Game Changer episode until we kind of get through the warfare. Because this whole warfare that we're facing and how we have to adjust ourselves, to me, I think is a game changer. I mean, we really have to start understanding what we need to do. And this all really started with this whole advent of FedNow and the I'm here to tell you, folks. I'm a little stumbling on my what I need to say here because I don't read any scripts. I don't have a script. This is all coming from the gut, from the heart, from me to you. And so what we have is we have what I think are enough established footings, enough established foundation that they are ready to seize final control, because creating the digital currency on the 15th, announcing it, and coming up this coming July, it's not going to, the end of the United States will not happen on the 23rd of July. Just like when you hear, I remember people saying, the internet, they're going to shut down the internet this year. It'll be this summer. And everything always slides around. It never happens. Well, we knew that they were going to seize, we know that they're going to kill us. And we know that, you know, they have been doing these things. As a matter of fact, if you really, you can't be surprised when all of a sudden all of these things start happening. As a matter of fact, when I started writing the What is the Real Problem, Martial Law in the 21st Century, and then the real teeth within the Constitution, or the unknown teeth in the Constitution, whatever that article is, and it's mine. See, I even forget my own stuff. See, I can laugh at myself. So here we go. When we look at those three articles, I mean, that first article was written in July of 2019, August 2019, in response to my trying to get Second Amendment folks to actually do something. The second article, Martial Law in the 21st Century, was I saw the pandemic starting to play out, and that was written, and I think it was published in January. That was written when I think I started maybe in December, but I think it was published in January. But anyway, when I saw what was going on in November with this COVID or with this SARS, this flu epidemic that was kind of hitting China, I said, you know what, that's going to hit all of us. And I didn't know, but I knew it was going to hit all of us, but I didn't know how effectively and how quick it would hit us, because I didn't know that the Chinese New Year celebrations happened to be in Wuhan. So all of the people, all the Chinese from around the world that went to celebrate the New Year, voila, they deployed that for them. And they knew this. This is why, you know, if you lay everything out, we actually told you all of this stuff years ago. Some of this stuff they're still trying to prove, and some of the stuff they're finally admitting to. But the evidence was already there. I mean, if you look at the evidence, you connect all the dots. One can easily turn around and say, this is what they've done. This is what they did. We're doing. This is how they were doing it. And it was all started in America. But anyway, I digress, because it's about content today. It's about the ratification debates. And so I am only trying to tell you, folks, that when we look at what's going on, as much as we want to start fighting the little things, we really have to say, okay, how can we fight this and fight this effectively? So when we looked at the digital currency, what we needed to do was actually create the petition. Oh, yeah, I forgot. Let me finish that little story on those three articles, though. So that first article, and then the second article, The Unknown Teeth in the Constitution, all three of those articles, I was moved to write. And when you look at what they were saying and what they basically had provided, because that third and final article was written in The Unseen Teeth in the Constitution to help people understand how petitions would actually move us in the right direction. Then right after that, I started working with Bob in the summertime It was August time frame in working on these petitions. Everything was just laying out. And so I'm not sure why somebody else wasn't doing this, but apparently, you know, the Lord came to me and, or I should say, I felt moved. That's a better way to say it. And I wrote these things. But if you look at them, how apropos they are in helping people understand and creating a foundation of moving this way. This is why the next article, when I finally got this resistance a little over a week ago from Wyoming, from a Wyoming call, somebody actually saying counties aren't relevant. They're no longer relevant. They're just a bureaucracy admin for the states. I mean, we shouldn't even be elected. I mean, they didn't say this. I basically countered them with sarcasm saying, well, we shouldn't even be electing our county commissioners. Why? Because the whole point of electing people is they're our representative. But you're telling me they can't be our representative. So why have them elected and why have them take an oath of office? That creates a direct conflict with what she's saying, because for the longest time, and so what I ended up doing was I ended up creating this next article. These articles are applicable and apropos for our time and what we're doing. And so the other article, and actually I'm getting this article done before I finish my First Amendment petition and how to get organized. And so I guess, because if you think about it, you actually have to convince people that the counties is the legitimate place to start. And I started writing this First Amendment petition article, and some people have read it, and they've, you know, I've gotten good reviews on it, but what I've written so far. But I guess I was putting the cart in front of the horse, and I needed this challenge. So, you know, it's all playing out, and there's no doubt in my mind that the Lord's in charge. But Satan is actively working and he has active agents that are actually moving forward. And I'm telling you, the Bible tells us we're outnumbered, but don't worry. Operate with faith and all things will be well. Regardless, we can't allow ourselves to be so scared that, you know, we're not willing to take a stand and actually be willing to make that ultimate sacrifice for our family, for our future. Don't take life as that precious, because if you truly believe in Him, what matters is being saved. What matters is that we actually stay on His path and supporting liberty so that all will have their agency, that all will have their individual liberty, their individual sovereignty. And the only way to do this is by, as I was saying yesterday, by using the truth and by using the Constitution and maintaining and supporting and moving us back towards individual liberty and individual sovereignty. Now, again, remember, folks, we don't want a democracy. We have to have this hybrid Republican form of government where we actually do delegate powers, but we can't pervert it by injecting our own ability to, you know, legislate and so forth. What we have to do is we have to make sure that our public servants are operating, because the only reason we had problems with them actually spending more money had nothing to do with the fact that we wanted control over whether they could spend the money or not, that they had no authority to spend that money. And so we've actually been duped into perverting ourselves. And we're actually pulling the trigger in some cases. When I say everybody's got blood on their hands, that goes for everybody, because their paradigms are incorrect. So let's just dive into where we left off, but because we're in the Massachusetts debates, and no, I don't have Paul today. And the reason I don't have Paul today is because we typically meet at a certain time, and I was unable to make that time available so that I could do, you know, him. So forgive me, Paul. We'll talk in our next recording, because he will be here tomorrow. And at least I'm hoping so. Things could change. But bottom line, what we're trying to do here, what I'm trying to do is, you know, keep a schedule. And it is summertime, and I've got other things that I need to do. So there's going to be cases like this where I may not have somebody else helping me by reading the content just because I've got problems. I mean, I can't afford to pay these contractors hundreds of dollars an hour to come in and do landscaping. That's what that they want, over $100 an hour. And so, you know, I don't know what to do. I mean, and if all things were reasonable, I mean, we're making more than enough money for ourselves, but just to do these little things, it's a principle, folks. It's a principle when landscaping actually costs more money than my medical care. And so remember that government wants to control all of these things that are out of control, the pricing and things that are unrealistic. And the reason they're getting unrealistic is because that, you know, everything's getting inflated and all this manipulation. So eventually we will have a department of babysitting. We'll have a department of landscaping. We'll have a department of dentistry. We'll actually have, you know, not only health care, we'll have dental care and we'll have pet care. In other words, veterinarians will be taken over too. When the state takes over everything, they take over everything. So if you think that, you know, this is okay, when you actually see these contractors, oh, well, you know, I actually heard a landscaper tell me this, that because people are coming and paying cash just to get stuff done, because they want to come into our area. They're not even from this area. They're not even from this state. Californians or what have you, moving in with pockets full of dough saying, I'm willing to pay you cash. Well, these guys actually are increasing their price. They're turning right around saying, well, if you want me to do work for you, you have to pay more too. This is all due to that invasion. This is all due to all of these effects are coming from our federal government. And the whole point of yesterday's show, the whole point of this warfare I'm trying to prove to you, I'm only scratching the surface, but they are executing a warfare or a broad spectrum warfare attack on us and our states to destroy us. Warfare is not, it's actually used to subdue and control. In some cases, they do the destruction just because they want to show that, you know, either you humble yourself and subdue yourself or we'll destroy you more. Anyway, and they're actually, because if you think about some of the things that they're doing, and we haven't even scratched the surface on those things, you know, these have long lasting effects that, you know, like on your health. The heavy metals and those types of things that we're being exposed to from the spraying, the food, the crap that they're giving us. Yeah. I used to always ask the doctors, especially the first time I had a prescription of prednisone, I would ask the doctor, hey, can I get the doctor's prescription of prednisone instead of what you give me? And my doctor looked at me and I said, because that crap tastes terrible. I mean, have you ever tasted prednisone? And he started laughing and he said, you know, that's one of the cheapest drugs out there to manufacture. And, you know, you think that they could put a candy coating and they don't. And, you know, it's like they're making us suffer. And I go, but they make one for you, this candy coating. He goes, no, they don't. But they should. And so sometimes that's what happens is, you know, people actually make sure that they don't partake of and they have the better stuff, right? Well, I mean, everybody sees that. It's like watches. You know, when government takes control of watches, how much competition are we going to have? Well, there'll be the elitist that will get the Rolexes, and then everybody else will have the government furnished watch. And as a matter of fact, you won't need a watch because you're going to get a government furnished phone. And you have to keep that phone on you, just like China. And you'll have to keep this little device on you. And this is how, you know, you have to actually check in. I mean, it's crazy if you really look at how they're going to control you. Folks, you better start getting involved and you better start helping. You better start getting committed because you're going to rue the day. And, you know, it doesn't give me any satisfaction for anybody that will hear my voice echoing in their head that didn't do what they could have done. You got to do this. You got to get involved. I don't want that to play on you. So, you know, you got to make the commitment. Just do it now. Bite the bullet and jump in. Start helping. We need your help. With that, Let me just dive into the content because I, you know, also need to tell you the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org. And this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. We're not here to entertain you. You know, I might be able to sing. I might be able to dance. I might have other talents. But it is all about getting people equally informed, because that's when we all start agreeing what we have to do. And so the best way to understand the Constitution, because remember, it's constitutional illiteracy that's destroying this nation. The only way we're going to understand it is by reading, at least reading these highlights that I've created for you out of the ratification debates. And so, and actually what I'll probably do is I will probably create a book as a part of my work and volumes of all these other things that I'm doing, like the county and so forth. I will probably just create a book of nothing but framers' quotes out of the ratification debates, you know, the book for you to read. This is what you need to have. You know, go read the rest of it, but read these things. And, you know, we're talking about big paragraphs, so it's really hard to take things out of context. And to be clear, you know, I've told you the difference between the anti-federalists and the federalists. The anti-federalists were lying. They were making, you know, what do you want to call it? Exaggerations and shock value of what this Constitution would do. And as the framers redefined it or actually re-explained it, because a lot of times they just were re-explaining the same things over and over again. And you'll get exposed to that. So you're going to actually see, you know, those types of things being panned out to where they say, oh, here we go again. Why are we revisiting this? I've actually already proved this when we were looking at Massachusetts. So forgive me for a quick second. Let me get a drink here. All right, so I need to wet the whistle a little bit. So in Massachusetts, we're down on page, 96, and this is Mr. Nason, and this is what he says regarding the oath of office. He says, "When, sir, we dissolved the political bands which connected us with Great Britain, we were in a state of nature. We then formed and adopted." I tell you these things. "We then formed and adopted the Confederation, which must be considered as a sacred instrument. This confederates us under one head as sovereign and independent states. Now, sir, if we give Congress power to dissolve the Confederation, to what can we trust? If a nation consent thus to treat their solemn compacts, who will ever trust them? Let us, sir, begin with this Constitution, and we see what it is. And first, we the people of the United States, etc. If this, sir, does not go to an annihilation of the state governments and to a perfection of consolidation of the whole Union, I do not know what does. What shall we consent to this? Can 10, 20, or 100 persons in this state who have taken the oath of allegiance to it dispense with this oath? Gentlemen may talk as they please of dispensing in certain cases with the oaths, but, sir, with me, they are sacred things. We are under oath. We have sworn that Massachusetts is a sovereign and independent state. How, then, can we vote for this Constitution that destroys that sovereignty?" Now, he's just trying to make this point, but you actually realize that within the Constitution, it actually recognizes the state sovereignty by only having these very, by the states delegating these very specific things. And the point is that he's emphasizing the character of this state that it had, or this, not just the state, that the Constitution had the requirement of the oath. Now, even though that has the reeking of an anti-federalist position, bottom line, this is his next comment, because this is Mr. Nason. So Colonel Varnum basically pipes up and makes, you know, this you know, banter back to him, very short. And then Mr. Nason continues on, and he adds this one part. He says, "The eighth section, Mr. President, provides that Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises, etc. We may, sir, be poor. We may not be able to pay these taxes, etc. We must have a little meal. We must have a little meat whereon to live. and save a little for a rainy day. But what follows? Let us see. To raise and support armies. Here, sir, now he's really just jumping through, because again, this, he's an anti-federalist, but he pointed out the strength of the Constitution. He pointed out how we evolved. He even said that after we basically broke away from Britain, we created our Confederation of Association, then Articles of Confederation. Even we went from a mealy-mouthed confederation to a stronger, more rigid, inflexible confederation, which required even further changes that brought us into the Constitution. And actually, as I tell you, the Lord, the divine hand of providence, gave us this Constitution so that we wouldn't have to evolve further, that this would actually be able to create the global government for the world. I'm telling you, it's all there. And it is only limited. These limited powers are not a threat to state sovereignty. This has been proven. But here's an anti-federalist that is basically making these comments. So let me get back to this. We, sir, may be poor and so forth. Let us see. To raise and support armies. Here, sir, comes the key to unlock this cabinet. Here is the mean by which you will be made to pay taxes. But will ye, my countrymen, submit to this? Suffer me, sir, to say a few words on the fatal effects of standing armies that ban the Republican government. A standing army was not, was it not with this that Caesar passed the Rubicon and laid prostrate the liberties of his own country? By this have 7/8 of the once free nations of the globe been brought into bondage. Time would fail me were I to attempt to recapitulate and the havoc made in the world by standing armies. Britain attempted to enforce her arbitrary measures by a standing army. I'm going to stop right there. He is not pointing out that that standing army is not a professional army under the control, because remember, every 2 years that standing army is to actually be relieved. And so they can't have, the only thing that they have is a navy, that the standing army is the militia, and that the only need that they needed to do to actually, you know, they had to have purposes to execute the laws of the Union, so they couldn't create an enforcement agency. So they needed to make laws that were in, and as they made laws, here's the proof of this, as they made laws, they very rarely needed, other than the Whiskey Rebellion, to actually deploy the militia. How many times did they deploy the militia to execute the laws of the Union? I'm going to tell you. They did it regularly in the territories by actually deploying an army into the territories until the state governments took over, and then they took over their own militias and so forth. Now, see, one of the problems that I see is that when you look at a state with only 60,000 people and you don't act, the state doesn't actually take over by actually forming a militia for executing the laws of the Union and to protect the people, then you actually make the people a little bit susceptible to, let's call it, the hostility that you're baking into these states. In other words, by creating these reservations or these Indian lands that the federal government is now regulating, and that was the purpose of keeping the federal government there. Well, they had no authority to do that. If we started peeling back what they should have been doing constitutionally, had we had true constitutional framers in the presidency and in government, the Indians would either have to choose. They would either have to leave or try to go to war to fight for their land. Bottom line, they could and they did, but bottom line, it has always gone to those who've conquered. I mean, Israel had conquered. Did not Israel go into the promised land and kick those people out? Was not Israel eventually in the promised land? I mean, prior to that, has not Israel or has not society migrated in so many different cases? And bottom line, the laws of nations were actually supporting what we would call conquest. The laws of nations were able to do that, but these were not sovereign states. Anyway, we'll get back into this when we come back after the break.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so people may not like conquest. People may not like, you know, the expanse of uncivilized government or what have you. But bottom line, when we look at the other nations of Europe, Portugal, and I'm not even trying to excuse, because I don't think it's an excuse at all, because I believe that when Britain came to America, they really tried to help educate and help them, you know, come forward from their superstitions and everything else. I find it ironic that the progressives, you know, talk about the superstitious religious Christianity. They talk about the superstition of holistic types of things. But when they look at the Indians, oh, that's all sacred. I mean, here's the hypocrisy, folks. Here's the hypocrisy. Enlightenment is enlightenment, and enlightenment for all people was capable and actually was supposed to be happening, and it was actually ingrained in the Constitution to happen. The framers were doing everything they can to help transition the indigenous people, the Indians, into this new form of government, to introduce them. These people were brilliant people, just like the Africans were brilliant people. All people are brilliant. I don't think, you know, when you start racing at what race has the most brilliant, I don't think you're going to win ever. I think that there are way too many circumstances that are involved in that equation. You know, not just genetics, but environment, all these different factors that create geniuses. And bottom line, we're all people. The only difference is, you know, the color and our cultural practices and so forth. But when we obtain truths, when we obtain facts, and we realize that this is better, I mean, look at the life expectancy of Massachusetts. They may have been puritanistic, and they may have been, you know, very, let's just say, altruistic with their blue laws and everything else. But they had the greatest mortality rate out of, I don't know of any place that was better. 70 years life expectancy in Massachusetts at the time of the Constitution. That was awesome. I don't even think Paris, France could, or France or any of the nations in Europe really came close, and they were much further along. Because at that point in time, there may have been other points where enlightenment kind of got people there. But bottom line, it's all about enlightenment, and it's all about creating a society of individual liberty. Now, people may have this notion that, you know, they believe that their religion and their culture is the cat's meow. Well, when it comes down to proving all of that, I mean, there is something to say about natural forces, but when you create the mystique that Hollywood and everybody is creating regarding the indigenous people, then I'm saying hogwash. It's basically placating one small minority, but poking a huge majority in the eye regarding Christianity. So don't tell me that it's okay for these superstitions, but it's not okay for these because you don't believe them. And, you know, don't allow all of the information to come onto the table so that we could actually and academically and freely examine it. You know something's wrong when all of a sudden you can no longer openly and honestly debate the issues. When people actually try to shut you down because they've been programmed to not allow the truth. Remember I told you yesterday, the truth is the key factor in, you know, in winning against evil. The truth, the Constitution, individual liberty, and individual sovereignty. That is how we defeat evil. So anyway, let me kind of get back to what was being said here. And he said, "But sir, we had patriots who alarmed us for our danger, who showed us the serpent and bade us beware of it, Shall I name them? I fear I shall offend your excellency, but I cannot avoid it. I must. We had Hancock and Adams and a Warren. Our sister states, too, produced a Randolph, a Washington, a Green, and a Montgomery who led us in our way. Some of these have given up their lives in defense of the liberties of their country. And my prayer to God is that when this race of illustrious patriots shall have bid adieu to the world from their dust as from the sacred ashes of the phoenix, another race may arise. Who shall take our prosperity by the hand and lead them on to trample onto the necks of those who shall dare to infringe on their liberties?" Now, you know, there's a lot of people that like immortalizing these types of comments, but he's basically asserting, he's lying that the Constitution allows these things to happen. We can prove that everything that has happened that has led us astray were actually outright violations of the Constitution. And he is ignoring that. "Sir, I had a voice like Jove. I would proclaim it through the world, and I had an arm like Jove. I would hurl from the globe those villains that would dare attempt to establish in our country a standing army." Because he's saying that the Constitution allows them to create a standing army, where the language is they can't. The language is that they can only maintain the army, and the army is not a permanent. See, we have an army today, and it is unconstitutional. The United States Army is unconstitutional because it is not doing those three things. It's not executing the laws of the Union, which is the militia. The actual army is to be the militia, not this Department of Defense army that is now permanently funded. Even though they play this game, "Oh, well, we're just funding it, and we're just funding it again." No, no, no. We already went through the definitions that it actually, you couldn't just stay in service. The only reason you could stay in service is because we're at war. And the wars have ceased, and they've caused, "Oh, well, we're going to occupy." No, they don't even have the authority to occupy. So anyway, if we really want to go down every single one of these tactics and branches, you know, I can prove to you how the Constitution wasn't the problem. It's how they started trying to imply, and just like this gentleman, Mr. Nason, is implying that these things are within this Constitution when they're not. "I wish, sir, that the gentlemen of Boston would bring to their minds the fatal evening of the 5th of March of 1770, when by standing troops they lost five of their fellow townsmen. I will ask them, what price can atone for our lives? What money can make satisfactory for the loss? The same causes produce the same effects. An army may be raised on the pretense of helping a friend, or many pretenses." So he's right. But the whole point of the army was for three specific things: executing the laws of the Union, suppressing insurrections, and repelling invasions. Based on a pretense of helping a friend or ally is not within the Constitution. Do you understand that now? See, had we actually gone into, and if you've listened to me for a long time, you'd hear me say that we should not be involved in a foreign war unless we are absolutely, our interests are a threat. In other words, they're sinking our commerce and those types of things, and we need to actually defend those, you know, our rights of commerce and our interests. We have a right to defend those things. And when we actually see a global despot that has that ability, then we should actually do those things, like with Hitler, with, you know, the Cold War. I mean, we had a right to basically ensure and protect our interests. But to go into Iraq, to go into these other places without having the contingency, even though there may have been the pretenses of us doing it right, the parameter should have been we would go into Kuwait if Kuwait wants to become a state in the United States and become a territory. It's the same thing with Hong Kong. It's the same thing with Taiwan. Our only, you know, our only reason why we should be involved in these little wars is that the people have voted that they want individual liberty and they want to participate in this Republican form of government that is, to me, I think it's perfect. I can't see a better government. It's perfect. And that's the only reason it's not completely, you know, blemish-free is because of us, people, that had the spirit and had things, and had the heavens parted and everything been spelt out, that then it would have been perfect, but still, we would still blemish it. But anyway, I get back to the fact that he's making an assumption that they, under the pretense, well, that pretense would be a direct violation of the Constitution. He goes on and says, that night, sir, ought to be sufficient warning against the standing armies, except cases of great emergency. They are too frequently used for no other purpose than dragooning the people into slavery. But I beseech you, my countrymen, for the sake of your posterity, to act like those worthy men who have stood forth in defense of the rights of mankind, and show the world that you will not submit to tyranny. What occasion have we for standing armies? We fear no foe. If one should come upon us, we have a militia, which is our bulwark, and it's the nation's bulwark. It became the standard, and he's still sullying the Constitution. Let Lexington witness that we may have the means of defense among ourselves. If during the last winter there was not much alacrity, shown by the militia in turning out, we must consider that they were going to fight their countrymen. Do you, sir, suppose that a British army invaded us at that time? Such supineness would have been discovered. No, sir, to our enemies' dismay and discomfort, they would have felt the contrary. But against deluded, infatuated men, they did not wish to exert their valor or their strength. Therefore, sir, I am utterly opposed to a standing army in time of peace. Well, so is the Constitution. The Constitution actually demands it. The Constitution only allows the army to be formed to execute the laws of the Union, to suppress insurrections, and to repel invasions. To create a standing army for any other purpose, to enforce the federal laws that are unconstitutional is unacceptable. This is why I go back to those three articles. When I started off this show, I talked about these three articles that I wrote. If you read those three articles, it'll help, you know, straighten out your mind in understanding what we can do and what they can, or they're supposed to do, and how they're doing all of these things that they're not supposed to do, and they're getting away with it. Because we don't understand the Constitution and this whole point of federalizing the militia, only federalizing the militia, and then they can only execute laws of the Union by that one federalizing, or they can suppress insurrections, or they can repel invasions. But to actually start creating laws that are arbitrary, that aren't even within, like the environmental laws and all of these other, you know, forestry, park service, all of these federal enforcement bureaucracies are unconstitutional. Those are standing armies, and they've done it under our nose without anybody even going, huh? You know, hold on here, you're executing laws. Well, that right here in the Constitution, the only authorized power of executing laws is given to the militia. The federal government can't even execute the laws of the Union. they state and they started adding to their verbiage that they can actually legislate, make laws for the enforcement and so forth. And we can get, when we go through the Constitution, we prove the difference between executing these laws by the militia and them having the ability to create their own force. Because if they did that, they would actually have to change this Article 1, Section 8, that part of calling forth the militia. In other words, you can't have two powers. Yeah, we're going to do this, but we also have this power that still exists in the Constitution. No, they've actually nullified that. And they did it unconstitutionally. And they don't have the authority to do all those things. That's why understanding the Constitution really helps us just, you know, put asunder. You just tear up what they're doing and say, you have no authority to do any of this stuff. Anyway, his final paragraph is this. And as a matter of fact, he starts it off with the paragraph. He says, the paragraph that gives the Congress power to suspend the writ of habeas corpus claims a little attention. This is a great bulwark, a great privilege indeed. We ought not, therefore, to give it up on my slight pretense. Let us see how long is it to be suspended. As long as a rebellion or invasion shall continue? This is exceedingly loose. And so when we get into Virginia, they actually contain it tighter. He's right, you know, not denting this. But in the Virginia ratification debates, they actually defined what that should be. They said that they should only suspend habeas corpus. They should only invoke martial law in the areas where they have to deploy the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, or repel invasions. And it's only to be done on the actual militants and combatants and those people acting, not the population. And it can only be done, you know, when they've actually deployed the militia, not before. So they've actually created these parameters, and I even addressed this in Martial Law in the 21st Century article. If you haven't read that article, I actually spell it out. What they can constitutionally do, because that's how the Constitution was defined in the ratification debates. Why is not the time limited, as is our Constitution? But, sir, its design would then be defeated. It was the intent, and by it, we shall give up one of our greatest privileges. Mr. Nason concluded by saying he had much more to say, but as the House was impatient, he should sit down for the present to give other gentlemen an opportunity to speak. And see, you know, he was actually, you know, I'll just say going on about all of these assumptions that they could do these things illegally. Well, hold on here. That doesn't make sense. If they're doing things illegally, that means that they can't do those things, because the Constitution clearly limited those things from being able to be done. So we jump down now to Reverend Mr. This is literally 2 days later. They meet on Saturday. That was on Friday. And now we're jumping to Monday in the afternoon, when Reverend Thatcher actually comes up and actually gives us this long dissertation. And I don't know if I have time. We've got just under 10 minutes. But I want to pull forward here. And he says, with respect to the first of these considerations, I trust there is no man in his senses but will own that the whole country hath largely felt the want of energy in the general government. While we were at war with Britain, common danger produced a common union, but the cause being removed, the effect ceased also. Nay, I do not know, but we may safely add that union produced by uniform danger was still inadequate to general and national purposes. This Commonwealth, with a generous, disinterested regard to the good of the whole, appeared foremost in the day of danger. At the conclusion of the late war, 2/3 of the Continental Army were from Massachusetts. Their provisions and their clothing proceeded also in a great measure from our extraordinary exertions. The people did this in the fullest confidence that when peace and tranquility was restored from the honor and justice of our sister states, our supernumerary expenses would be abundantly repaid. But alas, how much hath our expectation been blasted? The Congress, though willing, yet had no power to do us justice. the small district of Rhode Island, and they call it a district, not a state, of Rhode Island put a negative upon the collected wisdom of the continent, that this was done not by those who are the patrons of their present infamous system of paper currency, but by that part of them who now call themselves honest men. We have made exertions to stop the importation of foreign luxuries. Our brethren in the neighboring states, from the view of local advantages, have taken occasion to distress us upon the same on the same account. They have encouraged where we have prohibited, and by those iniquitous measures have made our virtue and public spirit an additional cause of our calamity. Nor have our calamities been local. They have reached to all parts of the United States and have produced dissipations and indigence at home and contempt in foreign countries. On one hand, the haughty Spaniard has deprived us of the navigation of the river of the Mississippi, which is why when they actually created that treaty, when they started creating states, they made sure that ocean-going or rivers that could support commerce became federal avenues. Just want you to understand why the rivers aren't really owned. Now, when you look at the Colorado River, the Colorado River is not a river of commerce. The Colorado River, actually, its origins on the ocean is right there on the Mexican, you know, California border, right? Pretty close to it. And so because it actually goes over into Mexico, you know, we don't allow that, you know, for them to bring commerce in and out over the Colorado River. But going looking up river into the states, because the states weren't using it for commerce, they were actually using it for the water. Now it's just a trickle. It's basically a sewage dump in Mexico that actually has nothing but like sewage literally going into the ocean. Anyway. Let me get back to this. On one hand, the haughty Spaniard has deprived us of the navigation of the river of the Mississippi. On the other hand, the British nation, by extravagant duties, ruining our fishery. Our sailors are enslaved by the pirates of Algiers. Our credit is reduced to so low an ebb that American faith is a proverbial expression per perfidy. As Punic faith was among the Romans, thus have we suffered these species of infamy, infamy, that's with an M, abroad and poverty at home. Such, in fact, have been our calamities as are enough to convince the most skeptical among us of the want of a general government in which energy and vigor should be established, and at the same time, the rights and liberties of the people preserved. A constitution has been presented to us, which was composed and planned by men who in the council and field have in the most conspicuous offices served their country in the late war. It comes authenticated by a man who, without any pecuniary reward, commanded our army and who retired to a private station with more pleasure than he left it. I do not say, Mr. President, that this proves the form of government to be perfect or that it was an unanswerable argument that we should adopt it, but it is a reason why we should examine it with care and caution and that we ought not rashly and precipitately to reject it. Then he goes on and says this, and I think this will be very interesting. It will be objected there are more powers granted than are necessary and that it tends to destroy the local governments of the particular states and that it will eventually end either in an aristocracy or despotism. To answer this objection, two considerations should be taken into view. The situation of the continent when a constitution was formed and the impossibility of preserving a perfect sovereignty in the states after necessary powers were ceded to a supreme council of the whole. As to the first, let us candidly examine the state of these republics from New Hampshire to Georgia and see how far vigor and energy were required. during the session of the late convention, Massachusetts was on the point of civil war. In Vermont and in New Hampshire, a great disaffection to their several governments prevailed among the people. New York absolutely refused complying to the requisitions of Congress. In Virginia, armed men endeavored to stop the courts of justice. In South Carolina, creditors by law were obliged to receive barren and useless land for contracts made in silver and gold. I pass over the instance of Rhode Island. Their conduct was notorious. In some states, laws were made directly against the Treaty of Peace, and in other statutes were enacted which clashed directly against any federal union. New land sufficient to discharge a great part of the continental debt intruded upon by needy adventurers, our frontier settlements exposed to the ravages of Indians, while the several states were unable to or unwilling to relieve their distress. Lay all circumstances together, and you will find some apology for those gentlemen who framed this Constitution. I trust you may charitably assign other motives for their conduct than a design to enslave the country and parcel out for themselves its honors and emoluments. The second consideration deserves its weight. Can these local governments be sufficient to protect us from the foreign enemies or from disaffection at home? 13 states were formed already. The same number are probably to form from the lands yet not cultivated. Of the former, yet smaller divisions be made, the province of Maine hath desired a separation in time. A separation may take place, who knows, but what the same may happen with respect to the old colony of Plymouth. Now conceived that the number of states increased, their boundaries lessened, their interests clashing, how easy is a prey to a foreign power? How liable to the war among themselves. He's just pointing out this whole vulnerability of how, you know, America, if it was to form or continue going down this path of being like a Europe, we were going to be divided amongst ourselves. Anyway, he goes on and says this, let these arguments be weighed, and I dare say, sir, that there is no man but what would conceive that a coercive power over the whole, searching through all parts of the system, is necessary to the preservation and happiness of the whole. With that, it's a really long paragraph, and so we'll wrap it up here. Folks, as he starts laying out these arguments, he starts actually making sense that when you look at the system and how these sovereign nations, you know, these sovereign nations and cabals were trying to be maintained for the power-grubbing people that wanted their states to be able to do, you know, those things. Because I tell you what, in Virginia, and when you look at the Carolinas and so forth, and even Georgia, you would think, and Georgia rubber stamped it, but you would think that these states would have had great wealth if they continued growing westward and, you know, controlling all that land and resources. These were cabals that were looking at their own self-interest and not understanding a limited government that this Constitution created. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.